Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matter Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with playwright, actor, and filmmaker Aurora Real de Asua, whose play, Wipeout, will be presented by Alleyway Theater. In Wipeout, characters Claudia, Wynn, and Gary are three lifelong friends celebrating their golden years, who are tackling the challenges of learning to surf in Santa Cruz. As they trade their comfort zones for surfboards, they navigate both the literal and metaphorical waves of aging and friendship, and embrace new experiences and discover the courage to ride the waves of change together. In this interview, Aurora and I talk about early inspirations, how much we say when we're not speaking, and the humanity found in Wipeout, which runs September 6th through the 28th at Alleyway Theater here in Buffalo. Tickets are available at alleyway.com. I hope you enjoy my interview with Aurora. Aurora, hi, how are you today?
I'm good. How's it going?
I'm very well. I always like to start my interviews by asking, is there a story from your youth that relates to what you do now?
The best story that I can think of. When you say relates to what I do now, do you mean as a writer or do you mean for
writer,
this
place as an artist, as a filmmaker, all the things you
yeah,
do?
Yeah. There's one story. So when I was 4 years old, I was obsessed with Disney's Cinderella. I was obsessed with it. We watched it on repeat and I could not get enough of Gus Gus, the little mouse. And so for my fifth birthday, I begged my parents to do a little stage adaptation of it. And so they built this tiny little wooden set in the middle of the public park next to our house. And my stepfather helped me adapt it into a Cinderella into a two-page play. We got a box of costumes and we invited all the toddlers I was friends with at the time. And we just did Cinderella on loop for all of our parents for about 2 hours. And I refused to play any character other than Gus Gus. And to me, those 2 hours were heaven. And it was like this light bulb flicked on. And I realized that I could be paid to play other animals as a living, and that the theater existed as this thing that took the imagination seriously as a career. So from 5 years old on, I was hooked.
I love too that the character was Gus Gus, who's such a sort of like sweet character role. Like, what a wonderful way to sort of find yourself in the theater.
Right, because Jack the Mouse was a little bit too hard-edged and the human characters felt so boring to me. And it just blew my mind that with this practice, you could become not just different people, but different things, truly different aspects of the world. And both of my parents are scientists. And I think I come from a household that reveres natural life. And this was my way of following in their footsteps, was like, okay, if I don't have the brain to understand the chemistry of it, I can at least wear the plant costume and be a sunflower.
That's fantastic. Right. So speaking of sort of being the sunflower, you are a multi-hyphenate artist. You're an actor, a filmmaker, a playwright. Which of those disciplines came first?
I think writing and acting came at the same time. They came together. Although writing was a very fluid form when I was younger, and it wasn't until I got to college that it really found the structure of playwriting. And then filmmaking grew out of, I'm from the Basque Country, which is the northern region of Spain. And I am obsessed with its culture and I'm obsessed with its people. And I had this realization in my early 20s that the only way to really do justice to that community was to capture it on film. That the medium of theater, which is so great to play and to play with metaphor and to question and to think, it doesn't do justice to the minutiae of a place. To do that, I needed to go into film. So I would say of the three, filmmaking came third. But at the same time, I trained in painting when I was younger. And so I think I've always had a foot in the visual world.
Wow. Yeah, I can definitely sort of see that even in the kind of world in which Wipeout exists, which we'll talk about in a little bit, that sort of visual, everything you've said so far, the visual, the natural world, the kind of the sort of respect for science, the interesting characters, it's sort of all there. How interesting. Even in the first sort of 5 minutes of our interview, it's like, wow, I see it.
Yeah, I'm pretty clear. It's a pretty clear cut pizza.
Can you talk a little bit about your acting career, and maybe was there anything that you learned performing as an actor or working as an actor that directly inspired the way in which you write plays?
Yes, absolutely. Two things. The first was that I was absolutely sick of playing human characters. I think I was 2 or 3 years into my professional career, and I was like, wait, 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 wait a second. Like, my inspirations for this were the fact that I went to this all-girls school for 7 years. And so for 7 years, I was cast as, we played all the parts. And so I was cast as like the comedic male. So I did like the Moonface Martin roles and I did all of these goofy things. But what that taught me was that anything was welcome to me as an actor, that I could take on any single role and do it justice. And as I grew older and I came into the industry as a professional, I realized that that wasn't true. And in some senses, that's great that it's not true. You know, there are plays that demand a real specificity to the part. But on the other hand, there, I also experienced a real lack of creativity in terms of what was being offered to me. And so I think one thing I always think about as a playwright is, how can I craft a role that an actor has never done before? And how can I craft an identity for an actor to play that they've never even thought they could do before? And so in my plays, you'll find I have a play that's about the last day of Frida Kahlo's life, and it's told from the perspective of the seven hairs in between her eyebrows. And so the actors play eyebrow hairs, or they play surfers on a stage. And so I think there's a part of it where it's, how can I bring an element of the fantastical, even if the play is natural? And then I think the second thing that I learned, and I learned this by doing a lot of the great plays, I learned this by doing Stop Art and Churchill, and that it was that the best playwrights leave so much space for the actors to interpret. And sometimes you're in a play and you can sense that the playwright is really just in dialogue with themselves, that all the play is there in the text. And I love plays that leave gaping holes for the actors to interpret and for them to bring their full selves to the piece. And so I strive to do that too.
That is fantastic. You know, on your website, you have listed, I love to tell funny stories about how weird it is to be here. And I'd love to know the kind of maybe the thought or the idea or the story behind that particular sort of slogan. How did this become your elevator pitch?
It's an odd one, isn't it?
But it's great. And it's so true.
I think it's actually, it came from the poet and philosopher John O'Donohue, who was an Irish one-time priest and writer, and he wrote a book about Celtic wisdom and a book about beauty and a book of blessings. He was this phenomenal force, and he opens up, I want to say it's his book Anamkara, which is about how Celtic friendship works in the modern world, and he talks about it's strange to be here. And I remember reading that as a young person and thinking that that was the sentence that most accurately captured both the absolute beauty and the horror of being alive, which is that it is just strange to be here. And all of us at our best are trying to navigate what it means to live each day. And that stuck to me as being very true.
That is really beautiful. You've been sort of, you mentioned that you've been kind of navigating the new world of film. Can you tell us a little bit about your short heart song?
Yeah, I come from the world of theater. And for my very first film, I wanted to make a short that had no words so that I could really see how the camera itself was speaking, because that's the real difference between writing and film is that, playwriting and film is that theater is all language and film is all eye. And so I set myself that challenge. And then my mother lives in Santa Cruz, California, and we have all of these beachcombers. And I've always found it so fascinating to watch beachcombers in the height of summer season. And you see all of these people enjoying the beach and they're surfing and they're swimming with their kids, and they're building castles. And then there are these solitary figures and they're usually completely dressed and they're wearing shoes and they're wearing socks and they're looking for treasure, gold. I don't know. I think it's a very curious figure. What are they looking for? And why are they so isolated? And so from that thought came the idea of, what if there was this woman who was completely isolated and alone, and the only connection she really had was with the things that she dug up from the sand? And what would happen if one time she dug up a whale heart that was alive that she had to take care of. And for the first time in her life, someone needed her. And I was fortunate to work with just the most extraordinary producer, Nina Cochran and DP Mike Weldon. And the three of us basically crafted this bizarre little fairy tale about what it means to love again after you've lost that possibility for so long.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Well, where can our listeners watch that? Is it
It's
available?
on Vimeo, it's on MeToo TV, and it just got put on a Short of the Week's YouTube channel.
Oh, amazing. Very cool.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So your first film was a film that had kind of no words, that was sort of was surrounded by the natural world and some fantasy. I'm wondering, did that, when you came back to playwriting and, you know, solely kind of really living in the world of language, did that experience shift anything for you?
Yeah, I think I learned how much we speak without speaking and how powerful that can be on stage. And I am pushing myself to use that more. It's interesting. I think of some of my favorite playwrights, like Martin McDonagh comes to mind, of the way he uses language with a ferocity, right? There's an over dialogue that feels highly theatrical and very real, because often when we want to say something, we either speak too much or we speak too little. And I think I was very familiar with the speaking too much, and practicing film made me want to find moments of nonverbal communication and silence within theatrical storytelling.
Wow, amazing. Well, I'd like to shift to sort of speak about the upcoming production at Alleyway Theater. They are producing your play Wipeout. Where did the inspiration for that play come from?
I would say, like, the material from which it was built came from years of spending evenings with my grandmother watching Sex and the City and talking to her friends, and realizing that older women are absolutely wild, and more often than not, they're portrayed as doddering or weak or feeble. And that's just not my experience of the older women that I meet. I've often found that the older we get, the more we become the truest and most honest and extreme versions of ourselves. Like, there's a peeling away and eroding that happens over time. So it's in part that, and it's in part that I'm a surfer and that I've surfed my entire life, and I can't tell you how many first surf lessons I've taken, and I could write the surf lesson off the top of my head in my sleep. But the actual writing of it was a pretty incredible experience. I had written a draft that had nothing to do with this original Wipeout. It was about Hawaii. It was still surfing, but it was nothing to do with what the play is now. And I'd written it for a college course, and I remember my professor and my mom were both like, "This is terrible. We can't work with this, and you're better than this," is really what they were saying. It was, your heart isn't in this. And I thought that they were right. And so I got a 1 week deadline to try something new. And I just remember sitting down and into this coffee shop one morning, and I opened up my laptop and I opened up a new blank page. And as soon as I put my fingers on the keyboard, these voices popped into my head. And so, over the course of 2 or 3 days, the entirety of this draft came out. And of all the plays that I've written, this is the one that I feel like I've had the least control of creating. It was as if I had done the living experience necessary to make it. And then I just sat there, and these three, four characters who were desperate to come onto the page saw that I was ready and came out. Because it was an amazing experience. The first time writing this, I was learning the plot as I was going, and I didn't know some of the plot points. And I don't want to spoil it for our listeners, but it really felt like I was an audience member to my own play. And that experience hasn't really happened since. So I feel very, very tender towards this play.
And I think that there is such a tenderness in it. Like, I think the play is riotously funny and wonderful, but there's also like a sort of a sweet side of all the characters that you get to meet, and it just feels like a wonderful evening at the theater.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind to say. I hope so. I don't listen to things if they don't have jokes. So I have to put jokes in place.
I was like, oh, should I make a joke right now? But I don't have one, unfortunately. This is a new play, but it's been done at other theaters. What has surprised you about seeing this play fully realized?
One thing I think is the audiences. I've been blown away by how different audiences click to absolutely different parts of this piece. So, for example, we did a performance of it in Chicago, and I think the vulnerability of the characters really spoke to Chicago audiences. They really leaned into that. The Sacramento audiences loved the comedy, and they loved the California references. And then we did it in Massachusetts, up in Gloucester, and they really responded to the friendship of it. And it was pretty amazing to witness just different strands of the play resonate based on where we were. I don't think I could have anticipated that.
May I press and ask though, is there an overall kind of or overarching audience reaction to the play? Like, how do people leave after seeing the play?
I think people start and they're like, oh, this is fun. I love the Beach Boys. This is so cute. I watch Golden Girls. And then they start to realize they're in a little bit of trouble. And then by the end of it, I think they get a little rocked.
On the car ride home after seeing Wipeout, what do you hope the car ride conversation home is?
I hope people have different opinions, and I hope people like different characters, and I hope it's emotional in some senses, which I mean to say is I hope that this is a play that people connect to with their hearts and not just their minds, and that whatever people talk about on the car ride home or argue about or joke about or laugh about, I hope it comes from a place of recognition that the people they see on stage remind them of the people in their own lives, because this isn't a play about arguments, and this isn't a play about, I'm not trying to make a deep philosophical point about surfing. This is really a play about love and about friendship. And we have that all in spades in our lives. And so I hope people really connect to the heart of the play.
Alleyway Theater is a theater that supports new plays. I'd just love to ask you inside of this interview, why do you think it's important to support theaters that produce new plays?
Yeah, in part, I think it's because plays make our lives worth living. Stories make our lives worth living, and great stories take time, and great stories require a lot of nurture. And I don't think Wipeout could be the play that it was had it not been for the 3, 4 years of development that it had in various readings and various workshops. And with plays in particular, they take a long time to develop. And so any effort that's made to launch a new voice, to give something a workshop, to give something a chance, to put something up in front of an audience repeatedly, it's giving that playwright and director and group of actors an extraordinary gift of understanding just what works. Because unlike other mediums, you can't go and scurry away to your shed and write a play. You can't sit in a tiny mountain cabin and paint something. You have to interact with the audience, and you require a sort of community. And so we need that, and we need that time and time and time again, because it takes time to figure out what jokes land, what arguments don't make sense, when is the play running too long, what sucks, like what pieces of writing. It's not the actor's fault, and it's not the writer's fault. It's just not working. And I think that's a commitment. And in some senses, I think the best thing about theater that I love is that it really involves the community. And you need an audience, and you need designers, and you need actors. You need everyone to pitch in. And when they do, and when it works, it creates these nights where you look around in the darkness, right? And you have this little frisson, and you're like, ooh, we're all together in this. This isn't a genius. This isn't one person striking out. Like, this is something we've built together.
Thank you. Those are my questions, but I always like to end my podcast interviews by just saying, is there anything that you felt was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, I just hope they have a good time and both take nothing seriously and everything seriously. I think I'm really fortunate to be doing this with Buffalo. They're extraordinary, and I feel very grateful.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today. It was really great to talk to you.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Aurora. If you're looking for an amazing night at the theater, go see Wipeout at Alleyway Theater. Tickets and more information are available at alleyway.com. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studio.